It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
And if you'd like to call in with your question, we'd love to hear from you now. You can also dial the local numbers.
247-7282 or 353-4674.
Wes Collins joins us from Harvell & Collins. The right advice at the right time. Good morning, Wes.
Good morning, Ben.
And what are we talking about today?
I think we're going to change gears a little bit and talk about things that folks need to know about construction-related matters.
Well, it's springtime, a lot of construction going on.
That's right. Economy is a little better than it was maybe 3, 4, 5 years ago. And I think there's a little bit more building permits being pulled and that type thing. And, you know, I certainly deal with construction law-related issues here in Carter County and certainly Craven, Lenoir, Onslow, New Hanover, Pender, Eastern North Carolina, situations with regard to situations where maybe a property owner has an issue with some construction, even during the construction or after maybe the home or whatever the building was constructed years later. Sometimes we represent the general contractor. Sometimes we represent subs. So,
well, let's look at it because you have elements here. You've got
a lot of moving parts.
Typically in any construction project, you have obviously the person who's contracted the effort, the project.
Well, let's start with the most basic. I mean, sometimes if you're talking about, a very small project, you don't have a licensed general contractor.
Right. You just hired a handyman.
Yeah, that limit is 30,000 under the statute. So if those non-licensed builders out there, handymen, as you say, are careful not to do jobs over that $30,000 limit. Otherwise, they can get themselves in a little bit of trouble with the state.
Right.
And in the event that they undertake a job that is over the $30,000 limit, and let's say they haven't been paid that extra 5, 10, 15 that's over the 30 or whatever it is, they're not entitled to it legally.
Hmm.
If they've already been paid, that's one thing. But if a dispute arises and they've already been paid, the 30, then legally, since they're not licensed, they're not entitled to the additional amount.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
That's right. So a lot of times in these really small type cases with regard to unlicensed contractors, builders, we see that these individuals try to separate the contracts and say, well, we're going to build the porch for $20,000 and we're going to do the fence over here for $8,000 and then we're going to do the roof. That's $11,000.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of it being a total of whatever that number is, $35,000, $40,000,
we're going to make these separate projects.
It is separate projects all under 30. So, be careful with regard to that. Folks can go on the North Carolina General Contractors Licensing Board website and actually pull up information to determine if the person that they're dealing with is, in fact, a licensed general contractor. And to determine whether they're in good standing as well. So that's a good, kind of a pregame type situation for folks to do your due diligence before you get into the actual game
and
you get into the actual situation. So, we're starting at the very basics here, but these really small cases in the event that there's a dispute, a lot of times now that the jurisdictional limit in small claims court is $10,000, these disputes sometimes end up over there, just the small claims. Our small claims was 2, then 3, then
now
4,
five,
then 5,
and now it's 10.
And now it's 10. So, that's we've talked about on other programs, but, that $10,000 jurisdictional limit is just at the small claims level. But then there's the automatic right to appeal within 10 days. That kicks it up to district court. Then it goes to arbitration. Then your jurisdictional limit goes up to 25 instead of 10. So there's that whole multiple process situation that sometimes you see at that basic level dispute over kind of a small time construction situation.
Okay.
So
all right. Then as the contractors you start to have a contractor involved, you have subs. Then you have other people involved.
That's right. So, kind of the parties that we deal with is typically the general contractor is the person who's somewhat of the captain of the ship. I mean, he's the one who is responsible for making sure that the building code is complied with, that the construction is to a workmanlike standard, meaning consistent with reasonable and expected building practices in this area, that deals with the subcontractor, that deals with the owner, or subcontractors, and deals with the owner, deals with the architect, deals with environmental issues, you know, all of these things. So that he's the captain. So really it's kind of a three-party deal. You've got the owner who's having the property built. You got the general contractor, and then you got the subs who are in many cases just the tradesmen. You've got the, you got the roofer.
Sheet
you got
wall.
The framer. Yeah. You got the sheetrock guy. You got the trim guy. You got the HVAC guy.
Painters.
You know, you got the painters.
Yeah,
you got the insulation.
So many, yeah.
Right. It goes on and on and on. Now, Ben, we see construction contracts of all different types and sizes and shapes and different information in them. You know, construction can be done on many different type agreements. We hear of the cost plus. That's okay. Whatever it cost plus 15% or plus 20% or 18% or 12% or whatever it may be. And that's just what it is. It's whatever the materials cost, plus whatever the labor cost, the sub labor. And then the GC, general contractor, is going to put that additional percentage on top to cover, you know, his compensation and overhead.
Right.
Right. So we see that type. We see, of course, the flat fee. This is what you're going to get in the construction. And this is what it's going to cost. Now, in those flat fee contracts, you need to be very, very specific about what you're actually getting. You know, you need to, you know, obviously get into details with regard to, you know, everything as far as what quality of construction we're going to deal with, what materials we're going to use, what our finishes are going to be like. You know, have our building plans, of course, incorporated into the contract.
You know, this this becomes a very complicated issue for a lot of people, similar to, well, lots of things that, that you guys are involved in, whether it's estate planning or, or, you know, building a house, because we don't do it that often.
That's right.
So, so knowing all these things, I feel kind of a little bit lost to even know where to begin sometimes.
Right. Well, you know, folks don't really think about, let me go take this contract that my general contractor is proposing to me to my attorney and let him take a look at it before I sign off on this. And I think that they don't think about that because, you know, 9 out of 10 times you're not going to have a problem. You know, you'll work your way through it. You're not going to have any kind of issue. But in the event you do have a problem, then really that contract is what's going to dictate what the rights are on both sides.
Right.
So it probably is, you know, and I'm not one really, I'm not one to, you know, suggest going to an attorney if you don't need to.
Right.
I'm just, I'm really just not that guy. But in certain circumstances, under this type situation, it, you know, it probably would be a good idea to have your attorney look at your contract before you sign off.
Once again, the owner's not familiar with how all this works. It's pretty good to have another set of eyes who's maybe have had to settle these things in the past.
That's right. Well, you get into issues about, you know, what if you're just totally not happy with your general contractor? What if you're in a situation where your general contractor is doing a terrible job, is not there on the job, so on and so forth. And, you know, your contract really doesn't have the language that you need in it to terminate the relationship. So if you're partially the way through the construction, for example, and, you know, you don't have the language that you need in your contract and you want to get rid of the guy and, you know, but you're reluctant to do so because he might sue you back for damages relative to the fact that he's lost profit on this contract. He says you breached because you don't have the right to terminate me from this job. You know, so then you get in, get yourself in court over a contract interpretation where if you just had the right language in the contract itself, you would have the right to pull the trigger to let the general contractor go. based on this failure, that failure, whatever it may be, based mm-hmm. on a notice that was given, for example, and failure to comply with the notice. So just lots of moving parts with regard to that. I don't want to weigh the showdown too much here this morning with, you know, talking about what language to put in the contract. But, you know, the contract is what's going to, you know, dictate the rights of all the parties.
All right, we come back from this, and maybe we can take a look at what are some typical things that come up that end up being litigated. We'll take a look at that coming up in a moment here on Let's Talk Legal with Wes Collins from Harvell & Collins Attorneys at Law. You can find them online at harvellandcollins.com and give them a call for an appointment at 726-9050. Back to the program here on Coastal Daybreak here on the Talk Station. We're talking about construction issues, and Wes Collins joining us here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell & Collins. And so, Wes, what are some of the typical things that happen that end up calling you to put the fire out?
Well, you know, right from the beginning, if there's a problem during the construction, then mm-hmm. a lot of times you get into, you know, issues about wanting to fire the general contractor, issues about how is my money being used. I'm not mm-hmm. getting an accounting here as to how my money is being used. With regard to this, I'm not happy with the construction itself because the plans required this and the general contractor doesn't want to change it because he doesn't want to incur the expense and I don't want to pay for it, mm-hmm. the additional expense to correct his mistake. Just, I mean, the list goes on and on and on with regard to that. Now, obviously in the construction world, a lot of times we deal with situations where the construction is complete, certificate of occupancy, which is often referred to as a CO. That's mm-hmm. the stamp basically from the building inspector indicating the property's ready, you know, completed, consistent with North Carolina law, at least the building code, that, you know, there's issues later on. It could be issues with regard to probably number one is water infiltration. Mm-hmm. Water infiltration can lead to rot, mm-hmm. Issues with excessive settling, issues with things that weren't noticed initially that then presented themselves later, bad foundation situations, mm-hmm. you know, electrical problems. I mean, it could be, you know, the list could go on and on with regard to that. So really the two different categories are just what I stated there. I mean, sometimes you have problems during the construction itself. Sometimes you have to get a lawyer involved to smooth those things out and put either the owner or mm-hmm. the general contractor, whoever's, you know, the attorney, whoever I'm representing, right. you know, put right. them in the best situation we can put them in and advise them. And then on the other hand, the other category is just problems that we have later on.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the timing with regard to this, as we know in the world of litigation, Ben, we talk about this on and on and on. We've been doing this program for 13 years, and I would guess that every other week we're talking about some kind of timing issue with something, whether it's an estate related issue or construction or litigation, whatever it is.
And it seems like every subject has its own timing to it.
Does,
you know,
it
one's
does.
2 years, one a year, one 3 years.
It does. So. It does. That's, you know, as an attorney, you have to have a very good notice system in your office mm-hmm. about when the deadline is for that and when the deadline is for this. Because at any given time, you know, on our calendar system, we probably have 100 deadlines that are coming up at different times, you know, over the next, you know, month, and then
right.
over the next 6 months, and
right.
then over the next year, and then the statute of limitations next 2 years. So you really have to be on top of that. So in the world of construction, the timing issues are very important. First of all, timing with regard to the notice of lien. Now, folks have heard of that. They said they're going to put a claim of lien on my property.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean? We can't let them do that, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the timing with regard to the claim of lien is basically 120, 180, 120 mm-hmm. days and 180 days. Those are the two time frames. And what those really mean is that if someone contends, this could be a general contractor, it could
be one of the subs,
it could be a sub, it can be the architect, it could be the engineer, it mm-hmm. could be someone who's put work into the property.
And these are generally called mechanic's liens.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
mechanics and materialmen's liens.
Mm-hmm.
So if they have last performed their work on the property within the last 120 days, then mm-hmm. they have a right to file a statutory notice of lien under a particular statute, 44A, where really what that does is it puts the, could be general contractor, could be the owner, could be everyone involved, on notice that I claim that I haven't been paid for X, whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm.
But it has to be put on the title of the property or put
right.
filed in the courthouse, put it that way. There's a particular place you file those within 120 days of the last day that
the last day
that the bona fide work was done. You can't
okay.
go out, you know, on the 121st day and go nail a board up and say,
right.
I just, you know, revived this.
Mm-hmm.
So 120 days. So
like you hire, you say you hire a plumber and you put in a shower and
yep.
You're not happy with it there, but they said they did it exactly as they said they would. So you're not paying them. They want to put a lien on it.
That's right.
In order yep. to, but that's not all they might do, right?
Well, then we have the 180 day.
Mm-hmm.
So you have 120. So you have to file the notice of lien within mm-hmm. 120. And then that notice of lien, by operation of law, disappears if you don't file a lawsuit within 180 days of the last day that you've done your work,
mm-hmm.
whoever's filing the lien,
in order
to perfect the
right.
lien.
Right.
Okay. Now, that's not the only right. I mean, let's say that a general contractor or sub hasn't been paid. They have that lien right. But let's say they wait too long and they
mm-hmm.
don't file the lien. Well, they still have a right to sue.
Mm-hmm.
They have a 3-year right to sue on the contract.
But this may not be accompanied by a lien, though.
But it won't be accompanied by a lien.
Right.
Unless the lien is filed within that time frame. So the lien, really, all it is a cloud on title.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say that you have a construction loan. And let's say a construction loan, this is your loan that you're using to borrow money to construct the home.
Mm-hmm.
Well, construction loans are meant to be temporary.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got like kind of a floating interest based on how much you borrowed.
Mm-hmm.
It's not intended to be, you know, your typical 15-year, 20-year, 30-year.
It's not a mortgage.
Mortgage,
yeah.
Right. So what you want to do when you finish construction of that house is you want to go ahead and go into permanent financing. You
mm-hmm.
want to close on that. You want to then pay off that construction loan, which is basically due
mm-hmm.
in full at the time of the construction completion. But if you have a lien on record
yeah.
that hasn't been taken care of,
you may not be able to get the mortgage.
Well, either you're going to have to get the mortgage and maybe post mm-hmm. the money in dispute with the clerk of court to be held until it's resolved. But you see, the reason that lien statute is there is to protect those who are putting time, effort, and money into the construction.
Mm-hmm.
So they have a relatively simple and quick mechanism in order to perfect their interest.
Okay. We'll take a short break. We'll come back with more here talking about construction issues. If you have a question, 800-818-2255, 247-7282, or 353-4674. For Harvell and Collins, Attorneys of Law, and Let's Talk Legal, online at harvellandcollins.com, where you can also go and listen to past shows, and also 726-9050 to make an appointment with them. Hey, welcome back to the program here as we're talking about construction issues here. And you talked about how a sub or anybody else, I would imagine a developer who's building a spec house.
Right.
Building a house on speculation. This is where it really comes to play because he can't sell the house. Or,
right.
Or
right.
has a difficulty selling it if he doesn't settle up with all the contractors, all the subs.
Yeah, but it's interesting though. I mean, these developers, they usually have a good relationship with the builder,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they usually are working those things out because this developer's given this builder lots of construction.
Right.
So
right.
It's funny how that wheel gets greased there
mm-hmm.
so that gets worked out. But not always.
Mm-hmm.
But it certainly can hold up the situation. So, you know, we're talking about, you know, the liens, and we're talking about those rights with regard to that, and talk about timing. You know, the mechanics and material lien statute also has a provision in it that helps to avoid from frivolous or excessive amounts in your liens. And what that is basically, it says that if you're going to file a notice of lien on property, and if you don't win and at least win 50% of the amount you're claiming, then you have to pay the other side's attorney's fees for dealing with this. And interestingly, that statute doesn't really have a limit. A lot of our statutes on attorney's fees are limited at 15% of the principal, but that 44A statute is not limited on that. So you have to be careful when you're filing your lien. You have to make sure that you got your documentation in order, that you can prove what you're entitled to, that you did what you said you were going to do, that you complied with the terms of your agreement as the sub or the GC or whatever it may be. And you need to make sure that your amount that you claim in that lien is not something that, you know, is too high, but is actually consistent with the amount that you're owed. So that statute's something that we see. Now, I know we just have about 3 minutes left. So other timing issues with construction related issues. We talked about the timing as it relates to things such as during the construction, and most of the timing that deals with that is the 12180 as far as the liens.
Right.
You also have a 3-year breach of contract, of course, that 3 years. I mean, you have plenty of time. But as we talked about before on the program, when we talk about issues with the construction that we learn about later on, the statute of limitations that applies is really two of them, a 3-year statute and a 6-year statute. The 3-year statute is basically when you are on notice of a problem. Let's say that you have that leaky roof and it's leaking in multiple places, therefore you're on notice that you might have a problem with the shingles, with the way the roof was installed, so on and so forth. Well, you then get into an issue about how long you have in order to file a lawsuit about it. And it's a 3-year statute of limitations. If all the windows in the house are leaking, 3 years from when you first learned. Now, as you can tell, that may be a little bit of a gray area. When did I really learn about this? Well, if you
I learned about this window, but I didn't know about that one.
Well, that's right. And there's some cases in North Carolina that kind of connect it all together depending on the circumstances. So, but as soon as you send that email to the general contractor or the sub or whomever you're contacting regarding the problem, basically there's evidence of when you first learned about it. So you need to be, or that text or whatever it may be, so you need to be cognizant of that 3-year period if you've got a significant problem with your home, the construction, that hasn't been dealt with adequately. Okay. So additionally, the 6-year is 6 years from the date the certificate of occupancy is issued.
We're going to have to carry that on another time. Find out more from Harbell and Collins at 252-726-9050.